good evening and welcome to this very, very special asset colloquium. Before I more formal invite, but I want to say a few words about the asset colloquium itself. Asset stands for Advances in Science, Engineering and Technology. Medical sciences, and today aspects. Quite often we also hold popular science topics, and so on behalf of TIFR and also on behalf of the ASET, I would like to invite Dr. Anna Godino, Head of Education and Communications and Outreach Program of CERN. I'm sure all of you know, I don't have to expand what CERN is. I would also like to welcome Mr. Indraneel Ghosh, the Senior Advisor, Education, Research and Innovation, the Embassy of Switzerland in India. In fact, Anna was here. She must be having very, very hectic schedule for over several days, crisscrossing the country all around and seeing various metros and, preparing for a massive program. The program is basically what we call in India, showcasing India's mega science participation. But this is along with the CERN's very own accelerating science exhibition that has been running very successfully for many, many probably decades. And so it has been a kind of, the CERN exhibition is kind of nucleating a major public outreach activity, which is going to run for about 10 months or 9 months early next year. So she is here basically trying to bring momentum to this program, and even today morning she had a very hectic kind of a meeting and schedule in the Department of Atomic Energy office, trying to give fine details to all the participating mega science projects. So this long preface, but let me say a few words about today's speaker. Anna, as I said, is the Head of Education, Communication and Outreach at CERN. CERN stands for European Organization for Nuclear Research. She's a scientist turned science communicator, so that is the best of both worlds. And of course, obviously, she's very passionate about sharing the wonders of science and process of research with different groups of people, all sort of people, small and big, all through all sort of media. So she writes, print, face-to-face, like she's going to do today, videos, online, etc. She holds a PhD in developmental neurobiology from the University of London and was a postdoctoral research fellow at King's College in London as well. And then further, she has an MSc in science communication from Open University in UK. So before joining CERN, Anna was head of communications at the Portuguese National Funding Agency for Science and Research, and previously held several posts in science and communication at biomedical research centers in Portugal and in the UK. Anna has presented her work at many international science communication conferences and co-authored several papers and also a book, a children's book of science experiments, and has collaborated in outreach projects both in Europe, Africa and Brazil and other countries. So we are all very eager to listen to you. So here it's Anna. Thank you. Okay, so when Anna is preparing for a talk, I just want to, for those of you who have joined on Facebook, okay, our knob says like this, so I'm stopping.
Oh, switch off the mobile.
Oh, switch off the mobile. Oh, sorry. I thought I had to switch off my mouth. So, okay. So, those who are on live on Facebook, Chaiyan Y page, so please, if you have questions that you want to ask to Anna, please type in them. We will take up them from here. Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. This is working, right? You can hear me? Everyone can hear me? No? Oh, dear. Can you hear me now? I'll speak loud. I'll try to speak loud. Thank you very much for the invitation. It's such a great honor to be giving an ASET symposium or colloquium talk. I hope I live up to previous speakers in the colloquium, and please do forgive me if I'm a little tired. It has been a long two days, very exciting and very interesting, but I'm quite long. What I want to talk to you today is a little bit about the experience of communicating science at a very large research laboratory, and in this case it is CERN. And I'd like to start by asking, first of all, who has never heard of CERN? Right, I'm in there. Okay. Of the people who have heard of CERN, could someone just volunteer what CERN is? You here.
It's a particle accelerator. There is a big long tunnel, you know, spanning a very large area of landmass, and using magnetic fields, it accelerates electrons and protons and smashes them together to see what the, to emulate certain conditions, high energy conditions that we can't do otherwise, okay. And it creates exotic particles in such that.
Okay. Very good. That's a very good and a very encompassing definition of what CERN is. And it's also a very good example. And the first question I asked of how many people don't know CERN, because, well, obviously, where I am, where we are now, it would be surprising if there were many who had never heard of CERN. But I've asked this question in many public talks, and CERN is really a very strong brand. It's almost a household name. Everyone has heard about CERN. And CERN is the European Laboratory for Particle Physics. So the acronym CERN stands for Conseil Européen pour la Recherche Nucléaire. So it's a French name. It is a laboratory for particle physics. The goal of CERN, of the laboratory, is to understand the fundamental particles that make up the universe and the forces that govern the interactions between these particles. At CERN, we answer some of the most fundamental questions that have really haunted mankind since the beginning, philosophical questions like where do we come from, how is the universe evolving, what are we made of. But we use physics and we use science to do it. And specifically, we use accelerators. So CERN has a unique range of particle accelerators, the largest of which, as you mentioned, is the Large Hadron Collider. It's not the only particle accelerator at CERN. There are several that then lead into the LHC, which is 27 kilometers in length. It's 100 meters underground. It crosses the Swiss-French border. So our headquarters is in Geneva. This is the airport. This is Lac Le Mans. Geneva, the city, is down here. CERN offices are here. Well, they're spread out, but there's several offices here. And this is the LHC. This is one of the largest, the flagship accelerator, where particles, for most of the year protons, for part of the year lead ions as well, are accelerated around the LHC. They gain higher energy and then are spread around the LHC, two beams going in opposite directions, almost to the speed of light. So they reach 99.999999% of the speed of light. They collide, they are made to collide at four points around the ring where there are huge detectors. At those collision points, and thanks to the process that is translated by converted by the Einstein's equation, E equals mc squared, the energy of the collision is converted into the mass of new particles that are formed. And it's in that way that the physicists identify possibly, potentially, new particles and how the particles that are formed interact with each other. CERN is an international organization. There are about 12 to 13,000 physicists from around the world, from more than 100 nationalities, that use this infrastructure at CERN to carry out their research. So CERN is very much about these four pillars. Science, breakthrough, cutting-edge science. Innovation. The machines, the particle accelerators and the detectors that are built, that are used to answer these fundamental questions in physics, are some of the most, or actually the most complex machines on Earth. And they are a feat of technology. If you've ever been to CERN, or if you go to CERN, if you have the opportunity to visit these detectors, you will see that their scale is enormous, and they are made up of many minute pieces that come together to be able to detect the particles that come out of those collisions, the mass, the charge of those particles that come out of the collision. So CERN is also very much about technology. CERN is about peaceful collaboration. As I said, there are physicists from all over the world who come together. CERN has 22 member states, and then 5 associate member states. India is an associate member state of CERN. So CERN is also a model of how nations can work together for the sake of science in peace. And then CERN is also about education and inspiration. CERN is a very open organization. So we are very much, we want to share the passion that we have and that I'm sure everyone in this room has for science, for the research that we do. And we do it with the widest possible audience. And it's about this that I'm going to talk about more. However, communication and outreach encompasses all 4 pillars. So the communication that we do at CERN covers all these areas. We want to communicate the science, communicate the technology, the peaceful collaboration, and inspire audiences. Now, I believe that some of you, at least in this room, will be interested in doing science communication. When you communicate, one of the first things about communicating is thinking, why do we want to communicate? What is the aim? What is the purpose in the communication that I want to carry out? So we've asked ourselves that question at CERN, and we've come up with these answers. Why do we communicate at CERN? We want to raise awareness about what CERN does, about its activities and its impact on society. We want to maintain, obviously, support for CERN. We want to maintain support for CERN at the decision makers level. So CERN is publicly funded. The research is funded by taxpayers' money from the member states and also the associate member states. We want to maintain that support. So it's important that we're not closed, that we're open, and that we communicate, we talk about the research that we do. We want to obviously also engage with the general public about what we do. So we want to, rather than just a one-way communication where we inform, we want people to really understand and to come back to us with questions and with issues that they may have and misconceptions they may have about the research that we carry out. CERN education is very strong. It was one of the pillars I showed in the previous slide. So communication can also have this component of educating the current and the future generations of science. So encourage the young people of today to become scientists, to become physicists in the future. And then the research that's carried out at CERN is it's the most fundamental research that I know of. And as you may be aware, there is always a need to justify and to have voices that will speak for the need and the value of fundamental research. So we assume that as well as one of our goals of communicating, to be a voice for fundamental research. Now, over the years and over the last decade, it's been a super exciting time to communicate about CERN. Because in 2008, on the 10th of September 2008, actually it was just two weeks ago, there was the 10th anniversary of the startup of the LHC. So the largest particle accelerator in the world was switched on 10 years ago in September 2008. You may remember that, just trying to look, some of you maybe were too young to remember, but you may remember that there were many stories at the time about black holes being created by the LHC. I see some heads nodding. There was a lot of publicity, not generated by CERN, by the organization. There's a lot of publicity around the startup of this huge machine. It was scary to some people. And at the time, I wasn't at CERN at the time, but at the time the communications team, they took this face on. They confronted the fears, the conspiracy theories around CERN, and they used the website and they used many channels to clear the misconceptions, to explain what was happening, to explain the very, very low probability of a black hole being created. But that really catapulted CERN and the LHC into public opinion. And then, only 6 years ago,2012, two of the experiments on the Large Hadron Collider, so two of the collision points on the LHC, after years of accumulating data, were able to give a conference that was followed all over the world and by many journalists, where they announced that they had observed a particle consistent with the Higgs boson. And then at that time, the Higgs boson became a household name. Everyone was talking about the Higgs boson. Many people without really knowing what the Higgs boson was. But this was such, again, such a captivating story. This was a particle that had been predicted theoretically in the 60s, and it took 40 years to prove its existence. And it took the building of this enormous machine, the LHC, to prove its existence and to prove the theory of the Higgs field. So all this was an amazing story to tell, and it must have been such an exciting time to be at CERN while it was happening. And communications became very strong. This is the period when communications at CERN became stronger, and it really contributed to making CERN a household name. Now, this is 2018. We haven't had another discovery at the scale of the Higgs boson. However, we still have many good stories to tell. And so communication now is more important than ever, because we have many good stories to tell, and there are many unanswered questions. There is a lot of research that is going on at CERN. And so now we have worked on a communication strategy that will address with positive messaging, will address some of the challenges that we face now, and some of the opportunities as well with the discovery of the Higgs boson. And I'm going to use this communication strategy, the key messages that we've defined, to illustrate to you again, when you're thinking of communication, the importance of thinking what your goal is, and then defining the key messages that you want to get through, and these should not be too many. We've managed to define 6 key messages, and actually there may be too many. I think we can narrow them down to 4 key messages. Now, the first key message in our communication strategy is that obviously CERN is a world leader in particle physics. It is the laboratory to be if you want to do particle physics, if you want to do accelerator-based particle physics. And then the second key message, which is associated to that, is that it didn't end with the discovery of the Higgs boson. The discovery of the Higgs boson actually opens the door to new physics. We are now embarking on a journey of discovery that will last decades. And this creates an opportunity to talk about the range of scientific experiments at CERN, the discovery of the Higgs boson, and the non-big discovery at that level that has come over the years. It gives us an opportunity to talk about all the other experiments and the other research that is going on at CERN. Always focus on understanding the fundamental particles of matter that make up matter in the universe. And we have done that. So I've just selected this. This is a graph which plots the number of media clippings over the year. So this was last year, over 2017. And in red, I've highlighted stories about science, about specific scientific results that came out of CERN. And before going through each of them, it might not even be worth going through, but I want you to see that they rank quite high amongst the other stories, the other mentions of CERN in the media. And this, just to give you a flavor for how science stories, and they don't have to be big stories, big discoveries like the Higgs boson discovery, but results, scientific results, even the fundamental research, can make it into the news and are appealing to journalists and therefore to their readers or their viewers, because journalists will only follow a story if they feel it's appealing to the journalists or their readers. So we have put out stories about other experiments at CERN, the LHCb experiment, ALPHA, which is an antimatter experiment, so to study the differences between matter and antimatter, BASE, also matter and antimatter. So these are stories that came out during the year. Now, we also have an opportunity, and linked to those two key messages, that CERN is a leading particle physics laboratory and that it doesn't all end with the discovery of the Higgs boson. We've also taken this opportunity to communicate, and what we try to do is to communicate this journey of discovery, to try and communicate how research is very often one step forward and two steps back. Now, this is not easy to do, and you can't do it in one press release, and you can't do it in one news story. It's a gradual process, and you have to think of ways to keep the momentum, to keep the public interested in the stories and the stories you're telling. And one of the ways that we've tried to do this is to actually try and tell the stories of what is happening at CERN during the year. For example, Every year around Christmas time, the LHC stops, and all the accelerators at CERN stop. It will actually now, they will actually stop now for 2 years from the beginning of this year to, and then start again in 2020. But every Christmas time, there is what we call the end of year technical stop. And we thought it's important to tell our audiences what happens during that technical stop. Why do we stop? You know, a little bit on the giving back to society, these are very expensive machines. You stop for two weeks? What, do you all go on holiday for 2 weeks? Is nothing happening? Oh, actually, sorry, I must correct myself. The technical stop is for 3 months. So you, the technical stop for 3 months. So you stop for 3 months, you go on holiday, you don't do anything for 3 months. No, we felt it was important to tell our audiences what was happening. And really what's happening is there are very very heavy maintenance that is done to the machines, and the researchers are also very busy analyzing data during those 3 months. So we thought of ways of doing that, and we created this hashtag, What's Up LHC, and we've used social media to tell these stories. We've used Facebook Lives, like the one that we're doing, now, where we actually had the operations manager for the accelerators and one of the leaders of the CMS experiments down in the detector, talking about what was happening in those three months. We had another Facebook Live from another detector from the Atlas experiment, because we need to keep a balance between the experiments as well. And we had another Facebook Live. This is from the CERN control center, again, where all the accelerators are controlled, to allow our viewers, our followers, an insight into the day-to-day life, because we feel that that's also important to communicate, not only the big discoveries, but all the work that underpins those discoveries. And what we find is when we look at the number of mentions in social media, again, this is in 2017, you will see that the Facebook Live we did for CMS, so one of the detectors, ranked quite high. The Atlas Facebook Live, not so high, but still quite good. And it's quite well. And then at the end of the year, we published a photo of the LHC to mark the end of the Proton run. So again, this ranks quite high. These are not big discoveries, but on social media, it works. It reaches out to people. It engages them. You will see that other high points here are, again, on social media. This was a scientific result, a paper, so they can do very well on social media too. Another one here, the LHCb, the charmed particle, so a new particle that was discovered. And April Fool, which ranks very high. So every year, we have an April Fool joke. So this is only on social media. So we use our social media on the 1st of April every year. And there's a lot of work that goes into thinking, what story can we make up and put out on April Fool? And this is really to show the fun side of science, you know, break down the stereotype of the dull, boring scientists. This is showing that science is fun and scientists can be fun. So we always come up with very, very interesting stories. And last year, this was about the apparent discovery of an accelerator on Mars. What we do is we publish the story in the morning, and then by the end of the day, we immediately clarify this is April Fool's. Also, because we don't want the controversy theory people to pick up to run away with the idea. Now, in all this communication that we've done, the Facebook Lives, you saw pictures of engineers and of physicists that are taking part. In the Facebook Lives, yes. So for the press releases that we put out, we have to talk to this. We talk to the scientists. We get their feedback. We get their involvement in the press releases that we write. And that is because the collaboration with the CERN scientists, with the CERN experiments, is key, especially on social media, where we have set up a group of that we've called CERN scientists on Twitter, and they are really our experts that we call on when we get questions on physics that come through on the CERN main channels, and then we as communicators don't have enough physics background to be able to answer, so we'll just put it out to the CERN scientists, and one of them will pick it up and take up the question. They're also our antenna for what's going out in the community and what's going out in the wider social media world, and they will alert us to things, events, and to other postings that are relevant that we may want to pick up on and follow forward. Scientists are also very important because we like to tell the stories about the people behind the science, the people who work at CERN. So it's very important that we collaborate with them. If communicating is about telling stories, then when it comes to science communicators, scientists are the best storytellers. And so this is an example of a series of long-form articles that we ran on the website, actually three series. One we called In Theory, another we called In Practice, and another I Work at CERN. I Work at CERN is ongoing. So In Theory was a series of six interviews with theoretical physicists, with theorists at CERN. And this is an example. So we also tried to break down the stereotype, you know, physicist is a male, middle-aged man. You know, there are women working at CERN. They're still a minority, but there are women working at CERN as well. And these are ways of breaking down those stereotypes. And this is very effective. The In Theory series, this was the In Practice, which is more about the experimental physicists and the engineers that keep the accelerators going. And then we do a series every year on the 11th of February for the International Day of Women and Girls in Science. Again, trying to reach out to young girls who may think that haven't considered physics and engineering as a career option. And what we found was that the impact for this first two series, which were run now 2 years ago now, was we had an increase of 46% of our followers on Instagram. Again, these stories are posted on Instagram, on Facebook, and on our website. But it was mostly a social media campaign. And what really pleased us at the time was that people were actually reading this. These were really quite long articles. And in this avalanche of information that we're in the middle of nowadays, it was so gratifying that people spent up to 14 minutes reading these articles. And the average time went up from 2 minutes to 4 minutes. Now, 4 minutes reading one page of an article on a website, that's very good. So we were very happy. And this was something, so this showed us that human stories are important. So we tried to, in our digital communications, on our websites and social media, we tried to balance out the human stories with the science stories. We want to tell as many science stories as possible. And always remembering that when we tell the science stories, we have to answer, why is this important? Why is this relevant? And it doesn't have to have a practical application. It doesn't have to, if you work in the life sciences, you usually say that it has some sort of link to a possible treatment or cure for a disease. In particle physics, you can't say that, but you don't have to, because it's just the wonder of the questions, the big questions that are answered are captivating, and that's what we need to get across. I'll move on to the third message in the communication strategy. So we know CERN is the leading particle physics laboratory. We're on a journey of discovery, and to get through this journey of discovery, we need new accelerators, detectors, and computing capacity. These are the three pillars for CERN, is the accelerators, the detectors, and computing, because of the enormous amount of data that is generated by the collisions, when collisions happen. And now this message has to do with us looking to the future. So the LHC started in 2008. It will run until in the mid-2020s, but in 2016, the major upgrade to the LHC was approved, and it's called the High Luminosity LHC. So it's not a new accelerator, it's the current LHC, but in certain areas of the LHC is going to be significantly upgraded to increase the luminosity. Now, luminosity is a measure that is proportional to the number of collision per unit of time. So the more collisions there are, the more events, the more particles will be produced, and the greater the potential for discovery of new particles is. So increasing the luminosity is very important. Now, the high luminosity LHC will provide greater precision and discovery potential. It will come online, it will start operating in 2026 and will run till 2035. So we are thinking of a very concerted communication campaign around High Lumi, what we call it, High Lumi, it's like a nickname, instead of HLLHC. A communication campaign around High Lumi to explain why it's being developed, what it will produce, what science we expect to get from it. And this long shutdown that is happening now for the 2 years, starting from the end of next year, is precisely to prepare for Hailumi. So again, we're going to, over the next 2 years, be communicating about why we shut down for why the machine shut down, not CERN, the machine shut down for 2 years, and what happens during those two years. We're looking forward. But we're looking even beyond, because already the community is starting to think about the next accelerator to replace the LHC. So we're looking beyond 2035. So particle physics is, for someone who comes from the life science research like me, the scale of the planning, the scale of the experiments and the building is enormous compared to, you know, an experiment will last decades, preparing an experiment will last decades. And this is also something that's very important to communicate. And again, very attractive to people, because the public is inspired by those thousands of engineers and physicists who dedicate their lives to building these machines and to carrying out this research. Message number four is that CERN brings benefits to society. Do you know who this is? Yes. Right. So a few years ago now, and he's standing in front of the first web browser. So Tim Berners-Lee was a fellow at CERN when he created what is now the World Wide Web, which we use, all of us, everyone around the world uses every day. I imagine that the people, so the World Wide Web will be 30 next year, and we're going to be celebrating that. And we give this as possibly the strongest example of a contribution that CERN has made to society, that fundamental research is made to society, because the web was created by Tim. The initial driving force was to create a tool to allow the sharing of information amongst the many physicists who use the infrastructure at CERN, and it grew from there. But this is something we want to communicate as well. But beyond the web, which is such a good example, The amazing technology that is used at CERN, or the amazing instruments that are built at CERN, drive technology and drive innovation, and this driver of innovation is then used in other areas. Many of the technologies that have been used in the detectors, in the silicon detectors at CERN, are the same as the ones that are used in PET scanners. Much of the technology is the same. So hadron therapy is also an accelerator-based therapy. So there are similarities, and it's a technology used in research that is then used in medical application. So we try to communicate this as well. This is a particularly important message to communicate to decision makers. But the impact of CERN, beyond this impact on concrete applications in other areas that have economic impact, is also more of a social impact and an educational impact. So education is a core pillar of CERN as well. And since 1998, CERN has been running teacher programs. These are we can go from 1 to 3 weeks, now 1 to 2 weeks, programs where teachers, either from different countries or a group of teachers from the same country, will come to CERN and have lectures, have visits to CERN, have opportunities to have discussion groups, to discuss papers, and even in some cases to develop mini projects. And over the now 20 years, about 12,000 teachers have been to CERN. And there's a number for India. Seven teachers from India have been to CERN. And this is underpinned really by a sentence that was a statement from our Director General some time ago. There is nothing more enriching and gratifying than learning. And this is the objective. We want to give the teachers an opportunity to be in a real-life, cutting-edge laboratory where science is not black and white, to take them beyond the black and white science of the textbooks and to show them science in the making, which is very, which is fundamental. And the reason that CERN started working with teachers was because of the multiplier effect. The teachers will go back to their school, they will have a class of 20 to 30 students, or even more than one class. So the enthusiasm that they pick up at CERN, they can pass on to their students. This is a competition for high school students, and I mention it for a reason that will become evident in a little while. It's called Beamline for Schools, and it's a competition that's open to high school students all around the world. And the students, and it's very demanding because the students with their teachers, they have to put forward a research proposal. So like a real, if you're writing a grant application, they have to put forward, you know, what the question is, the hypothesis, the approach, the methodology they want to take, what results they expect, and to discuss their results. They are then, and we've had, since 2014, 936 teams from 76 countries have applied, and only two teams per year are selected. So every year there are about between 200 to 300 applications, and only two teams are selected. And the prize is that they get to go to CERN for 2 weeks and carry out the research that they've proposed with modifications if necessary. So they are given a beamline that they can use, so a beam that they can use to carry out their experiments. And they spent 2 weeks at CERN doing that. Now, these are the winning teams over the years. And this year, one of the winning teams is from the Philippines, and the other winning team is from India, from a school here in Mumbai. So I thought that was very interesting to share with you. In 2019, because we're in the long shutdown, so the accelerators won't be running, there will be no beam at CERN, this experiment, we have talked to our partner laboratories in Europe mainly, and DAISY in Germany, they've accepted to run the experiment or run this project next year. In 2020, it will probably run again in DAISY and also at the INFN in Italy, and then in 2021, it will come back to CERN. This is for the students who are really dedicated, who want to follow physics, and it really gives them an opportunity to think of a research proposal, to go through the scientific process, including doing the experiments. Okay. This is what was mentioned before, the traveling exhibition. And this is also an impact that CERN has on society, and it has more to do with the inspiring those around us and giving back to society. This is an exhibition that has traveled around many countries in Europe, has been seen by almost 500,000 people over the last 10 years. And it encompasses really the science behind what CERN does, so from the first moments after the Big Bang, the big unanswered questions, then the information and engagement around particles, forces, the Standard Model, and then what research is done at CERN, the accelerators that are used. So basically everything I've been telling you, if you visit the experiments, it's there and much more, and in a very interactive way. And next year, as you heard before, it's coming to India. So that should be very exciting, and it's coming to Mumbai. Mumbai will be one of the cities that it will be coming to. Now, message number five is that CERN is an open institution. And to show that, I put a picture here of a school class visiting one of the detectors. So this is the CMS detector, so you can see the scale of it. It's about 15 meters high, this one. So this is a school that visits. And every year, between 150,000 people visit CERN. Visits to CERN are free. They can be booked online. You have to be quick because they sell out. They get booked very, very quickly. And most of the visits are from schools. And most of the visits are from people who come from very far, not so much from our neighbors, people who travel from very far to visit CERN. Some come on purpose to visit CERN. Others are in the neighborhood in Geneva and will know about CERN and then book a visit. But it's 150,000 people who visit, and that's about two-thirds of those who request visits, because there are many more who request visits, but we just can't accommodate them because there are only so many hours in the day. Now, this class was very fortunate, and they were able to go underground and see one of the detectors. The machines weren't running, the accelerators weren't running. Most of the year they are running, and then you can't go underground. So what the visits team, or the exhibition team rather, has created are a series of visit points on the surface that combine real objects, and here you see a slice of a magnet with the two beam pipes through which the proton beams circulate. So real objects, and this object will help to describe all the different components of the magnets and all the engineering and all the physics behind the construction of the magnets. There's a mix of real objects with multimedia. Here you will see touch screens that you can touch, and they will have explanations of how the beams cross and the difference between the dipoles and the quadrupoles, the different types of magnets, what their different functions are. in the background, this is actually a working place at CERN. It's a large hall where magnets are built, where magnets are mounted. So the visitors also get to experience the real CERN, even when they aren't able to go underground. Many of the visit points are at the experiments. This is the new visit points at the ALICE experiment. There are many Indian colleagues who work on the ALICE experiment. So I thought I would show you this. This is a new one. But we also want to, for those who can't visit CERN, and especially for the schools and other venues that want to try and want to organize an exhibition around CERN or around particle physics, there is a website, it's still on the CERN 60th anniversary website, it will change soon, which has a range of content and material, videos, posters that can be printed and can be used directly. So this is easy to download and free to use. Okay. We also carry out CERN virtual reality. So we have several virtual, we've got two virtual reality clips and we plan to develop three more. So this is this visitor has a virtual reality headset and we've got two clips, one on that takes us down to the CMS detector. So you're actually inside the detector. It's an amazing experience and it works really well as an outreach tool. And then the guides on the visits, not on the virtual reality visits, but on the physical visits, are CERN engineers, physicists, and admin staff. And they do it on a voluntary basis. And again, this is where I come back to the role that scientists have. And this is an excellent way of gaining communication training skills. It's really on the job. You're really faced with people who come to CERN, some who know nothing about CERN, some who know a lot about CERN, some who think they know a lot about CERN. So you're really faced in that situation of interacting. They are given training, obviously, to prepare for these guides, for the visits. And there are also virtual visits. So if you can't physically go to CERN, this is mainly the experiments at CERN, will also organize virtual visits. So from anywhere in the world, you can follow. So this is Piotr in the CMS control room. And so there's an opportunity to ask questions and he can travel around and show where he is. Also within the spirit of openness, we have our open days. Open days are held during the long shutdown, so we have an open day next year. The last open day was in 2013, and we had around 70,000 visitors over a weekend that came on site to visit CERN. So this is a large project, but again, it's a local outreach. It's a way of reaching our local community, of opening our doors to our neighbors, allowing them to come in and to visit areas of CERN that are closed, that they aren't accessible to them during the rest of the year. Again, volunteers, crucial. 2,500 in 2013. We expect to need about 3,000 next year. And again, they are the staff, the physicists, and the engineer. Another very good opportunity to gain communication skills and to share the joy and the passion of doing science, obviously. We're always on the lookout to capture new audiences. And I told you before that most of the visitors who come to CERN voluntarily come from more than 600 kilometers away. So we're constantly thinking of ways of engaging our local community. So we'll open the doors to them for the open days, but we'll also go out into the community. And this is a picture of the CERN stand at a regular annual fair that's held in Geneva every year. And this is a fair where people will go to buy furniture, electrical appliances, there are cat shows, there are dog shows. So you wouldn't expect to find science there, and you wouldn't expect to find CERN. And we were actually invited to be the guests of honors, and we grab the opportunity to say, well, yes, of course we do, because this is a way of reaching those who think they're not interested in science, who wouldn't even think about watching a science documentary or visiting CERN. And this is very successful. There were tens of thousands of people that came through our stand. And we had the opportunity there for them to book visits. So, and many people who came through the stand had never been to CERN. And these are our neighbors, and they booked a visit to CERN there and then. And then we also, this is the group Bastille. I don't know if anyone knows them. But this is the, again, another, actually, I think this is a movie. This is another example of us trying to reach new audiences. So every now and then, we will either get asked by a a music group or a musician or an artist who is in the neighborhood and who would like to visit CERN. But we also have someone now who is on the lookout for when a band or a musician or an artist that has some connection, has shown in the past some interest in education and in science, when they're in the neighborhood, and they will be invited to come to CERN. And then when they come, what we do is we ask them, we also try to see if how many followers they have on social media, and we invite them to then tweet or Facebook or Instagram about their visit with the message around CERN. So we don't do it ourselves. We don't use our channels to say, oh, so-and-so was at CERN. We're very quiet, but we encourage them to do it, and then we retweet, because that's a way of reaching their audience. Because if we put it on our channels, we're just reaching our audience, but we encourage them to do it, and we're reaching a different audience. And there have been, you know, so Muse visited once, and I think it wasn't Muse, but it was another band that visited, that then they were given as a gift CERN helmets that we have in the shop. And then at that night for their show, they actually wore the helmets on stage, and they wore the CERN t-shirts. So again, you know, these little gestures make go a long way. Oh, that is a video. Well, you can't hear it. I'll just move on. So that's Muse. Okay, just move on. Message number 6, the last message, has to do with peaceful collaboration and diversity. How these are intrinsic to CERN. So CERN set up in 1954 as a way of avoiding the brain drain of European scientists to the US after the Second World War. Geneva was chosen because of its special connection as a place where different nations come together. Now, as I said before, we have 22 member states and over 13,000 physicists that come to CERN. And the idea is really that everyone at CERN, irrespective of cultural, religious background, or even professional background, we come from everywhere, and there is what unifies us is the science and the technology that is needed to carry out the science, to carry out the research. This is a message that is very often conveyed by our Director General and by previous Director Generals of CERN as well. Science for peace is a very strong motto for CERN. And as I said before, also it's very, very important. It's a very important message to get across to decision makers, to the policy makers. CERN is a model. So this model that CERN has of the member states, the governance model with the council, is also a template for other organizations, for other research organizations, the most recent of which is SESAME, which you may have heard of, which is a light source in the Middle East. So SESAME brings together 9 countries, many of which are literally at war with each other, or have been at war with each other. But again, the science, or in the Middle East area, but the scientists are working together again under this unifying umbrella of science. Right. So those are our messages, and I use them to sort of illustrate some of the things we do. We always try to align our activities and our projects with these key messages, and another key point of when you're thinking about communicating is, so why do I communicate? What message do I want to get across? Who am I communicating with? You may need to tailor the message slightly to the different stakeholders, to the different audiences. And this is a list of CERN's audiences that I've mentioned during the talk. So decision makers, obviously, the scientific community, journalists, teachers and students, the general public, everyone, the local community, the CERN community. We also do internal communication. And then potential candidates, future recruits, industry, alumni, and donors to a lesser extent. Now, we will continue to have great stories to tell. And so it's very exciting to do communication, science communication, at a research lab like CERN. We don't do it on our own. On the one hand, because CERN has the 22 member states, we in the communications group, we work very closely with our colleagues in the European Particle Physics Communication Network, which has professionals, communication professionals from the 22 member states. So we try as much as possible to develop projects together. For example, when there's a press release coming out of CERN, before it's sent to the media, it's circulated with our circulated to our partners and circulated to the institutes, research institutes that are involved in that research through these partners, so that then they can amplify the message and they can prepare their own press releases, their own media stories. We also work closely with our communication colleagues from other particle physics laboratories across the world, in the US, in Australia, in Brazil, and other particle physics laboratories in the UK. The CERN, the collaborations, the experiments, crucial in community. We communicate with them. We do things together. We share information. We share channels. We develop projects together, and as much as we can. And then also the funding agencies, the research institutes, where the thousands of physicists are affiliated, and they come to CERN and the universities. So we try to work with these partners whenever we can, and in a range of ways to really get these messages across, which are messages that are relevant for CERN, but are messages that are relevant also for particle physics, and even to a wider extent for fundamental research in general. And I will end there. I always feel like I have much more that I could say, but I think we have time for questions, and I'm very glad to take any of your questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very nice. Okay, I'm sure there are a lot of younger audience here, and they may be having a lot of questions for you. So, yes, we have.
What fraction of the CERN budget is set aside for communication?
Okay. It's about 1%, 1.2%.
And without the volunteers, how large is your...
Okay. So the team itself is made up of 30 members of staff.
Can you repeat the question for
you? Oh, yes, because it's not... So the question was, the first question was what proportion of the CERN budget is allocated to communications? And the second question is with the size of the team, not including the volunteers. And I was replying that we have 30 members of staff on the team. And then if we include students, so administrative students, technical students, and fellows, that goes up to about 60 people to cover the three areas.
Yeah.
Well, we hold media training for the CERN physicists and management, not externally. No, we have welcomed visits by other science communicators and other communicators that want to understand and share best practices with us about how we work, how they work, and what they can learn. These are usually short visits, like two, three day visits. Oh yes. So for the speaking of volunteers, thank you very much, Engineer. For the Accelerating Science exhibition that's coming to India and also to Mumbai next year. So the idea is that it will stay here for about 2 months, and the exhibition itself is quite interactive, but it will need facilitators, it will need guides to help people through the exhibition and to answer questions and to encourage them and actually to sort of spark questions as well. A great opportunity for PhD students, for postdocs, you know, for even for more senior researchers to get involved, to give up the time for this one-on-one interaction with members of the public. So I'm sure that there'll be a call out for volunteers. So if I understood your question, you're asking if it's essential, if it's important that you understand the science to be able to do, to communicate it.
Yes.
Okay. So that's a very pertinent question, because I'm not a physicist.
I am a, so you heard in the introduction, I did biochemistry as my first degree, and then I did developmental neurobiology as a PhD. This is the first time I'm working in an institute that is not a life science institute. So it was all new to me. I didn't do any of this physics at university, so I'm learning the physics. I think you don't have to know the science. You have to want to learn a little bit of the science. You don't have to be a researcher to be a science. You don't have to be a scientist to be a science communicator. It depends on what you want to do. But if you want to work in a research organization and do the communication, you don't need to know the science in depth. It's actually quite useful if you are able to take that one step back and look at the bigger picture of that result that was published, where it fits within the wider research community, and where it fits, you know, for the general public, so that you can take away, you can ask, what does this matter? What message do I want to get across? So you can step back a little. So sometimes it helps if you're not into the detail of the science. But having now moved into physics, I think it does help to have an understanding of the basic science, but that you can, you know, if you've done another science, you can you'd learn it. But also, I think what also helps, what I found very helpful in having a science background and doing science communication, is understanding the scientific community and understanding the scientific process. So and never forgetting that, you know, what the scientific process and it's crucial to communicate that. And if you've done research, you know, in different fields, there are differences. I'm learning that now as well, between the life sciences, the way the dynamics of the communities. But if you understand that really does help you to do science communication, I feel.
Any tips for a college dropout on how to become a science communicator?
Okay. All right. Maybe we'll have to talk a little bit more there. So it very much depends on your on where you are in your college, in your studies, and what sort of science communication you want to do. Because there is, you know, just from what I showed you here, there's so many channels. There's so much that you can do. You can write. There's probably good if you know more about the science. You know, you can become a blogger, you can become a YouTuber, which is very, you know, that will definitely reach a wide audience. You can give talks, you can work in a research institute, learn to write with the press office, you can develop exhibitions. There's so much you can do. So it really depends very much on what it is, where your aptitudes lie. You know, do you like to write? To draw, photography. What's are you more digitally minded? You know, it depends very much on what route you want to take. And then there are master's degrees out there that you can do. And actually, even at undergraduate levels, I think there are less. But there are many masters all around the world that you can do to that will give you the theoretical and also practical background to do science communication.
Do we have any questions left to answer in particle physics? Just upgrading our current accelerators has been answering these questions.
Well, that is the expectation, right? So that's why this project for upgrading the LHC was put forward, and it was approved by CERN Council. So there was a very strong physics case for this upgrade. It was actually recommended in the last update of the European Strategy for Particle Physics. There's another one that was published in 2013, I think, and there's another update that's starting now. So it was a recommendation from, and that is a grassroots consultation of the particle physics community, where they will put forward what the physics questions and the physics cases are for the future of the field. And that came out there, the high luminosity LHC. to answer some of the outstanding questions, and there are many, outstanding questions. You know, the and I'm going to explain this in very layman's terms, and I ask the physicists to forgive me, but there is the question of the difference between the amount of matter and antimatter in the universe. Big Bang created in equal amounts, matter and antimatter, should have annihilated, so we shouldn't even be here, right? But we are. So there are, and there are many research, there are many experiments at CERN, or several experiments at CERN, that are trying to identify, to find, there must be a difference, you know, at the most fundamental level, there must be a difference between matter and antimatter to explain why we are made in the universe of matter. So that's one of the unanswered questions. The other unanswered question is, what is dark matter? Dark energy make up 96% of the universe. So actually what we see around us is only 4% of the universe. We don't know what 96% of the universe is. So again, there are many experiments that are looking into that. Those are just two of the unanswered questions. And there's still very much to know about the Higgs boson. There are some mysteries about the Higgs boson that still need to be unraveled. So that is the short answer is you can't, right? You can't control 100%. You can do small things, like for example, if they ask for an interview, you can agree with them from the start when they come and ask for an interview that you will review the interview before it's published, or you will review the article before it's published. Many journalists don't agree to that. Some do. The other thing you can do is really, and this is, I think this is the most important, is create a relationship of trust with the journalists, or at least with some journalists, so that you know when you have important stories, you know who you can communicate those stories to, which journalists, because you can trust them to write a good story and I don't want to say a truthful story, but a correct story. But the truth is that, you know, we can't control the media 100%, so we work within these constraints. What we do at CERN, and the press office is very good at doing that, is so we monitor the media every day, and not only the traditional media, but now also social media. We monitor, and when we see something that's coming up, we follow it, something that can be problematic or that can be a conspiracy theory, we follow it to see if it grows, And what level, then we have a decision on whether we should act, you know, come up with a statement or have to do something. Most of the time, this is just like a little blip and it disappears. So then the decision is really, okay, we'll just let it go. Because if we come in, it will actually just, accelerate it.
Yeah, I said that was the last question, but that the question actually inspired me to ask this question also. So sorry for a couple of minutes. So this particular problem that was discussed at the end is much more severe in this country. The reason is that while organized publications and sending to journals or whatever is go through certain kind of moderation, there's a lot more coming on YouTube, coming on blogs, coming on various things. You don't really need to be anywhere near a scientist or whatever it is to actually very confidently say maybe wrong things. And they actually, they know moderation by any of these media. They go on to the on the web or maybe on the internet. And there are people who get inspired by this. There are also people who actually read this and they don't have any energy. Information is all free everywhere. They actually believe these things. They don't even see the credibility of a person who is actually putting it. In the country where we have a large population of, I want to use the word called illiteracy, but people who are easily manipulatable and people who, it's very difficult to communicate, there are a large number of languages. So the outreach here in the country becomes a big, big task compared to, I guess, the other Western countries. Mm-hmm. So I want to ask you if you have a quick fix for these kind of problems.
I don't know if I have a quick fix. I know that what you're describing is a problem in most countries, and then the scale of the problem will differ across the countries. I think maybe I can say a few things. One is that, and again, based on the experience of CERN, if you Google CERN on YouTube, it won't be our videos that come up first. It will be a whole series of conspiracy videos saying, so, but we, in a way, we've accepted that. We know, you know, it's like Don Quixote fighting the windmills. You know, we have to choose our battles in a way, which is why we monitor. And if things are growing, then we act. And the way we act is, for example, we have a page which is CERN answering social media questions. So we sort of, every time something new comes up, we add the answers so that we can just direct people, then use our channels to direct it there. So that's for the digital communication. Another aspect, and again, this is another reason for every scientist being a communicator, is that, you know, we can all do that in our homes, in our villages, in our towns, wherever we are. So the situations you're describing, you know, where people get information and have these misconceptions, I think it's a question as a scientist of always being aware of these misconceptions and just being ready to engage, but in a constructive way, because that's also where sometimes, very often, scientists get it wrong. You know, they come down and say, oh, you're ignorant or worse. So we have to really try and do it in a two-way communication. But yes, it's all out. We all have that role, and it's not just the communications people.
Thank you. So we'll thank you, but I would request Arnab, who is your counterpart in the Tata Institute of Fundamental Research, to your way. Things that you can carry.
Oh yes, very, very thoughtful.
And I hope Arnab will say a few things before he hands over this to you.
Shall I come forward?
So okay. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for the invitation, and I hope you've learned something or found it interesting.
Sure,
at least. Thank you.
So, thank you, everyone. The tea is served just outside the restaurant.
Okay, students, if you are here tomorrow, Anna has agreed to come to TIFR at 3 o'clock. Just an informal discussion about.